Today on the podcast, I'm speaking with Kim Ferris, the mother of Karina, a spirited, intelligent young gymnast who died in a freak accident when she was 12 years old. In our conversation, we draw the connection from early grief to when we worked together on the book Surviving My First Year of Child Loss in 2017 to now, 8 years after Karina's death. I can highly recommend listening to this episode with Kim, because she so beautifully describes how grief has affected her life, her relationship, and her faith, and how it has evolved from pure survival to how she experiences it now after 8 years. This was, without a doubt, the most interesting conversation I had on the topic of how faith and grief interact, especially given the fact that I would call myself a strongly spiritual but non-religious person. About this week's guest. Kim Ferris is a non-profit professional and holds a leadership position in financial operations. Originally from Mexico herself, she met her husband in Cairo, Egypt, where they lived for 15 years before moving to San Diego, California, in 2011. Kim struggles to rediscover herself after the accidental death of her 12-year-old daughter Karina in 2015. She finds joy in her son Mark, and together with her husband, they rely on their faith in hope. They established Karina's Joy Foundation to perpetuate Karina's joyful spirit and giving nature through youth scholarships and acts of kindness. She says, "I don't have answers. I simply intentionally survive one moment, one day, one week, one month, one year, and then I do it again. Maybe someday I'll survive enough to live and perhaps even thrive. In the midst of my own darkness, I can trust and hope that a rainbow might appear. One stormy day at a time, I'm expecting rainbows." I hope you enjoy today's episode. So welcome, Kim. It's so nice to have you on the podcast and to see you again. How are you today?
Thank you, Natalie. It's good to see you again and hear your voice. It's been a few years.
Yeah. Just to give
a be with you.
Just to give a little bit of context for those listening. I've known Kim for a few years now, since the book Surviving My First Year of Child Loss. And we've worked together on that. So if you haven't seen that book, have a look at that. And also Kim's story is part of that. But why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about how loss and trauma has affected you and your life?
Well, it's completely affected my life, but I think that to understand a little bit about our grief and really the trauma, you'd have to understand my daughter, Karina. So Karina was 12 years old when she died, and she was a fierce, brave, active, strong girl, which was very much how I wanted to raise a daughter to be. And she was a very, very intelligent, very strong, like I said. So she was developing into this beautiful person, beautiful, strong person. And kind of in that transition stage, she had just turned 12. So she was in that stage of transitioning from a young child to an older child or young teenager. And it was really exciting to see her personality come out, the way she thought and talked, the way she interacted with her friends and other adults, teachers, and other family members. Karina's the oldest grandchild in my family. I'm the oldest sibling, and she was my first child, so she's the oldest grandchild. So she already had many younger siblings. We have a younger son, so she has a younger brother. So she was developing in those leadership skills, which was, I loved to see. And it was very exciting to know that we had created this wonderful human who would go on to, we hoped, do really incredible things with her life and affect people and have an impact in the world. So we had this incredible young person growing up and becoming her own person. And she died suddenly. We were actually on a family vacation visiting my brother. And she, because she was so active and so strong and brave, she climbed up on a soccer goal post. So just the metal frame, and it didn't have a net on it, you know, but it's quite high if you think of those goal posts that you see in the soccer field. And she was training as a gymnast. She was also a competitive swimmer. So again, very, very strong. And she climbed up there and began to do some gymnastics maneuvers as if it was a gymnast bar. And the weight and momentum of her body and movement caused the entire frame to tip over and fall to the ground. And just the way she fell, she broke her neck. So it wasn't that it was that high or, you know, that anything like that. It was truly a freak accident, as they call it. So she wasn't ill. We didn't have any buildup to her death. So it was very traumatic. Myself and my son were both there. So we both witnessed this.
Yeah.
He was 9 years old at the time. So it has greatly impacted our family, whether we were there or in the case of my husband who was not there. And I had to make that phone call to him and tell him what had happened and that Karina had died. And at that point, that wasn't even a word I could use. I couldn't. My mind was trying to comprehend it, but my voice couldn't say the word dead or died. So even trying to communicate to him what had happened. And of course, it's something that it sounds unimaginable because it is unimaginable.
Yeah.
So that has greatly impacted me as an individual, me as a mother, me as who I see what I see the world to be. As a person of faith, it has greatly impacted my faith as well. It's impacted me in my relationship with my husband as a spouse and wife, and also as a mother to my living child, Mark. How is a deeper question.
Yeah.
It has impacted. And how is it's a little more difficult to really put that into words, but I would honestly say it has completely changed me. And I am a different person than I was before her death.
Yeah.
And that's hard to define because I think there are some things within us, you know, deep down in our core and our soul that we remain true to those, and those, that's kind of what creates our anchor in who we are and who we are in the world and in our relationships. And yet everything around that anchor has changed and is swirling. And so that has just continued to churn and change, and you can't help but change with that.
Yeah.
So I am a different person. My relationships are different. And that's still an evolving process.
So how long ago is that now, to give a bit of context?
Yeah. That will be 8 years coming up in February. So we're just approaching the 8-year mark. And Karina's birthday is also in February. So in February, we will celebrate her 20th birthday, which even is, that's incredible to think of. You know, I had this 12-year-old daughter, and now she would be a young woman, you know, in university, finishing soon, working on career goals, those kinds of things, perhaps having relationships and falling in love. So she'd be a different person now too than who she was then.
Yeah. And we as grieving mothers, we can't help to think of our children at the age of what they would be like now. And as I was listening to you, so I've heard your story before, but now I'm listening to it with fresh ears and also with an 11-year-old daughter in my experience. And I can really, you know, envisage Karina at 12. So, yeah, the question is really, how did you deal with that? How did your relationships change? And how did you deal with the grief and loss early on?
Early on, the word I do use to describe it is just surviving. And that, as you know, that was the title of the book project that you spearheaded and I had the honor of assisting with. So surviving child loss. And that first year was so very difficult. I mean, I actually remember the six-month mark that it felt like so long. It felt like it had been so long since Karina had died, and yet it still felt like yesterday. And just that dichotomy of time and being caught in this horrible existence was earth-shattering, really. And in terms of surviving, when it comes to survival, you just revert to kind of primal instinct and just really the basics, which even the basics were so very difficult in that early, fresh grief period. So whether it was sleeping or eating or, driving my son to school, anything that would be considered kind of a basic thing in your day was so very difficult. Taking a shower, there were days when I didn't shower for days on end. Or then I would shower, but not blow dry my hair because that would require too much physical effort. And it really did affect every piece of my being, spiritual, mental, emotional, physical. Grief is very physical, is what I found. And I wasn't prepared for that. And we weren't even prepared to have to grieve. So it was a complete assault of all the senses. And that really was just surviving.
That's a great way to describe it, an assault on all the senses.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, I just have goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard it saying that way. That's spot on. Were there times when you didn't or couldn't grieve?
That's a hard question to answer because I don't know. I don't know that I would say you can't grieve. I think grieving happens despite ourselves. And so I would say no. And in fact, I'm always grieving and I have always been grieving. Just the expression of grief has evolved or changed, or I'm able to better prepare myself for certain moments or conversations, or even in the moment, decide whether I'm going to allow my grief to be expressed fully, or if it's not the appropriate situation, or the person I'm having a conversation with isn't someone who knows me well enough, or I trust enough, or it's just not appropriate in that setting, then I can choose how to express my grief in a lesser form. So it's more, I wouldn't say I haven't been able to fully grieve. It's more about me learning how to grieve appropriately at the right times. And not to say that that doesn't completely get thrown out the window at times, because grief hits you suddenly when you least expect it. I've heard it described as a wave that comes over you and you're powerless against the wave. But there are other times when the water might be moving and there might be small waves, but it's not, you're still able to stand.
Yeah.
But you, even if you're standing in it, you always feel it.
So you said something about how grief evolved. You said, I don't think I can say I've never, or I haven't grieved, or I am still grieving, but it has evolved. Tell us a little bit more about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, and that is very much something that I would say in my first 5 years or 4 years, or it's even part of grief is you lose track of time. It's hard to know what is happening when, and when did this change, and when did I start to feel a bit differently. But in those early years, I remember reading books and reading memoirs and really grasping for the hope that it wouldn't always be such an assault on the senses as we were discussing. So really looking for, I was 38 when Karina died. And what I had most in mind was, I can't survive another 38 years like this. This isn't living. So the inability to get out of bed or the inability to interact emotionally, I couldn't imagine living another entire lifetime in that kind of state. So I really was, I read a lot, I went online a lot, connected with communities, trying to understand how does it change and when does it change. But even then, I was strongly reactive. And my reaction was, it can't possibly change. Yeah. I can't possibly ever feel differently about my daughter's death. I can't possibly reconcile to a life without her in it, was really the challenge. And it has evolved, and I wouldn't say I grieve less. I would say I grieve differently, and the grief has become gentler. So the survival instinct isn't as strong, or it doesn't take as much effort to get out of bed or to take a shower. It still takes effort, but it's less difficult, and just the grief is less acute. So the grief is always present, and it's always very much part of what we do and how I talk to people, how I relate to my husband or friends, but it's just not as overwhelming. And I'm more able to manage those emotions, or it's hard to describe it really. It's hard to think of a way of how to express it, but I would say it's less of a survival and more of a becoming comfortable with grief. So the evolving has been accepting that it will always be part of my person, that it will always be part of my marriage, it will always be part of my life, and making space for that and being okay with that, being okay with grief being part of who I am.
So one thing that catches my interest is the way that it actually shows up now after 8 years, because, you know, we use the word, I'm still grieving, but to be more precise or concrete, what does that look like practically now? How does it show up and when?
Well, definitely kind of the big days of the year, for example, Karina's birthday and her, the day of her death, which we call her death anniversary, those happen in the same week every year.
Yeah.
So that's always a hard week, which makes it a hard month. The buildup, as we know, is often more difficult than the actual day. So there's a lot of pre-grieving that comes and anxiety that comes as we head into those types of dates. And it's not just her dates. It's also my birthday or Mother's Day or what would have been her day of high school graduation. So that's where it can kind of show up unexpectedly. You know, social media was a refuge for me in those early days when I was surviving grief, because I could find like-minded individuals who were experiencing not the same grief, but something that I could identify and say, oh, that sounds familiar. You know, or I would feel that maybe they understand a little bit of what I'm feeling. So it was a refuge in finding those communities that I could talk to online or interact with. And then from those came friendships to then I could do a phone call or I could do a FaceTime with you and we could have some of those conversations. Now I have found social media to be less of a refuge and more of a trigger. And a lot of it has to do with the anticipated milestones and the days that should have happened for our family. So Karina's high school graduation was a big one. And yeah. That was very difficult.
And you see the pictures from all the other people sharing, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you see the pictures of these happy families and celebrating, and I'm so proud and can't wait to see what you do in the world and those kinds of sentiments.
Yeah,
that's very difficult. And then after that, young adults moving on to university and leaving home, and mothers expressing how much they miss their child who is gone to college maybe 3 hours away. Mm-hmm. And they'll see at Thanksgiving, you know, it can surface as anger.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult because I know my friends are rejoicing in their children and I very much want that for them, but it's also the anger at that I don't get to have those days as well. And even the resentment of those mothers to in what feels like a lack of awareness of, well, there are those of us who would give anything to have that type of day. You know, I would give anything to miss Karina because she's away at university.
Yeah.
And I would give anything to look forward to Christmas because she'll be coming home.
Yeah.
So that's how it surfaces now, which is difficult in and of itself because a lot of those are negative. You know, it surfaces more quickly when it's a negative. And so what we have to intentionally do is look for the positives.
Yeah. And I think it's also emotions, at least for me, that are difficult or that I judge in myself. For example, for me, I'm still triggered when I see twins, especially identical twins, and the experience that Ananda May doesn't get to see. And she's obviously expressing her grief. Mm-hmm. So, and these resentments are not really positively seen, or I have judgment against myself for feeling that. But it's good to hear mm-hmm. and to express that this is here too, and this is quite natural given the circumstances.
Right. Yeah. And even knowing that we will have many more days like that. You know, her friends will begin to get married, and I'll see their photos. Or my son will have his wedding, and his older sister won't be there. And, you know, it's funny what your mind thinks about when you're grieving.
Yeah.
So for a long time, it was the fact that we'll never be the mother of the bride. For example, you know, I have a son and I have a daughter, but I'll never be the mother of the bride. And that's a role or an experience that I'll miss out on as a result of Karina's death.
Mm-hmm.
And even I won't have grandchildren that are my daughter's children. And that's hard because it's a different relationship. You know, I love my son just as much as I love my daughter, and I'm sure I'll love his future wife. And I can't wait for, not too soon, but hopefully soon, at some point he'll give me grandchildren. But just the fact that that's my daughter-in-law and her children will be a different relationship.
Of course. Yeah.
Than my own daughter and her children. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of external things that I will end up missing out on. Mm-hmm. And that's still very difficult. I mean, you can hear it. I'm getting emotional about that. Yeah. But that's very real.
Yeah.
And those are the things that I deal with or think about or hurt about on a daily basis.
Yeah, there's all those secondary losses that keep coming in the years again and again that people with loss have to deal with. And it's not just saying, well, at least you've got a son and he's going to get married and you're going to have grandchildren. That's no replacement to what you don't have.
Right. Exactly. And any sentence that starts with the word at least is better left unsaid, because we're not grieving. Well, let's see. What's a good way to put it? It's almost like what you're given in life. You know, I was given a daughter and I was given a son. And it's the, once I'm given that gift, it's the expectation and hopes that surround that gift. And because I still have one of my gifts, doesn't mean I don't miss the other one or I miss the other one less. It's not enough. You know, I am still the mother of two children.
Yeah.
And even that's been very difficult as my grief has evolved and we meet new people and we get back out in society and meet people who don't know our story. And I'm viewed as, you know, I have one child, or I'm viewed as the mother of a teenage son. And those people don't necessarily even know that I'm the mother of a young adult. And that's difficult because I'm always trying to reconcile who I believe I am with who other people assume I am.
Yeah.
And those assumptions can be very hurtful. So then it's learning how to help the other person understand those differences or understand who I really am without being hurtful in return.
Yeah. I think you said something really important there. It's the children that people don't see that are still in our hearts and live with us in an ongoing emotional relationship that are not intentionally, but they are forgotten.
Right.
Because they're just not visible.
Right.
You mentioned two things which I would be interested if you wanted to go into that. You mentioned on one side that your relationship with your family, specifically your husband and your son, has changed. And then also your relationship with your faith. Would you like to elaborate more on those two parts?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I think that when you're in that survival mode, the most you can do is take care of yourself. And our body, you know, I said, returns to kind of a primal survival. And it's so difficult to take care of yourself, and it's almost unimaginable to care for someone else and help them in their survival as well. But when, you know, it's very rare that you have a situation where only one person is grieving. And in most cases of death, and especially child loss, there are multiple people that are grieving, and everyone's grieving very differently. I believe that that's based on the relationship with the person who has died. And that's the reason that there are differences. So, for example, I grieve as a grieving mother. My husband grieves as a grieving father. And even though those are equally valid griefs, and we have the same grief experience or the same traumatic story, the expression of our grief is still very different, not only because we're different as individuals, but because we have a different, unique relationship with our daughter. So the challenges in relationship in marriage have come with giving each other the space that we need to have our own individual grief and still finding the ways to connect as a grieving couple and as grieving parents. And without a doubt, my husband has done that a lot better than I have.
Interesting. What do you term better?
He's more willing to make personal sacrifices for my benefit.
Okay.
Then I am willing to compromise what I believe I need based on what I believe he needs or what he tells me he needs.
Okay.
And I credit a lot of our marriage surviving child loss. He deserves a lot of credit. So he has served me and loved me very well. And he's been a constant for our son. I'm going to get emotional again, but our son he's a wonderful human. He's 17, you know, even just yesterday, someone asked him, well, you know, you get to that point in your teenage years when you hate your parents. And he kind of looked over and he honestly had no idea what they were talking about.
how nice.
Yeah. And my husband is an incredible father. He was and still is an incredible father to Karina, and he is an incredible father to our son. And our son is going to be a wonderful man. And a lot of that is because of the example of who he has as a father and that man. So I'm very grateful to my husband and very blessed by him, by his love, and the way he serves and protects our family.
Hmm. How has it affected your faith? Because I remember Dad was also an important part of your life and your family's life.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. My husband and I both grew up in faith-based households. Both of our sets of parents are very strong believers in Christian faith. And we learned from a very young age to trust God, that God loves us and has a plan for our lives. And this experience of Karina's death was very difficult to reconcile to those concepts on a conceptual level, on an intellectual level. You know, well, if God loves us, why would he allow this horrible thing to happen?
Yeah.
Or if God loves Karina, why would he allow that to happen?
And I'm sure a lot of people listening here will say exactly my question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wish I had a really easy answer for that. But I think if there were easy answers, it wouldn't be called faith. And yeah. Faith is trusting what is unseen. And even though, you know, we prayed that Karina would survive her accident, we prayed that this wouldn't be our reality. And it's difficult to say, well, God answered our prayers, but the answer was no. I think that the assumption is that when we pray, the only possible answer is a yes.
Yeah.
Or that we will be granted or given what we want or desire. And just like a parent, you know, sometimes our children ask us for things and we say no. And it's not because we don't love them. It's because we understand what they need and maybe they don't understand it yet. Or we see something else that they can't quite comprehend yet. And faith for me has been understanding that I can trust that God still loves me despite allowing this horrible thing to happen in our life. And it's not something, I actually don't think I'll comprehend it in this lifetime, but I believe that I will comprehend it and understand when I get to heaven. And as a person of faith, I also react strongly to the suggestion that it's for a higher purpose. You know, I don't believe Karina's death was for a higher purpose. I don't believe that Karina's death is part of a perfect plan. I believe God has a plan for my life and my husband's life and my son's life, but I don't necessarily I wouldn't call it a perfect plan. I believe we live in a broken world, and Karina's death in part is a result of that broken world. And the only reconciliation of that broken world will happen in the next life. So for me, trust has been a lot about relying on God's love towards us and the hope in heaven that Karina is not only dead in this lifetime, but she's alive in heaven. And that I will see her again, and I will get to hug her again, and I will hear her funny little laugh and see her beautiful curls. But that's still difficult because that's probably a long ways away. So it doesn't, the faith doesn't remove grief. It doesn't soften grief. It just gives us hope for a future. A future with our daughter and with God in heaven. And, you know, my husband, in the early days, I heard him say to someone, you know, we're grieving. Just because we have faith doesn't mean we don't grieve.
Yeah.
That's we grieve good. Just yeah. as strongly. But in our grief, we have two choices. We can either turn away from God or we can turn towards God. And that was a very conscious decision that we did have to make to turn towards God in our grief. And having a 9-year-old son and trying to also teach him, and not just teach him by telling him, but teach him by showing him, how do you do that? And how do you turn to God in your grief? I'm going to quote my husband again, but he also said, you can either fall away from God or fall into God. So we have made the conscious choice to fall into God in our grief. And for me, a lot of that has just been honest and being honest and saying, you know, when people say, well, she's in a better place, I give myself permission to say, yes, that's true. And I believe that, but that doesn't mean it's right for me in my life now.
Yeah.
You know, her better place, it's hard for me as a mother to say that her better place isn't in my arms.
Exactly.
As opposed to in God's arms. So that doesn't, it doesn't eliminate the grief or the reality of death. But it gives us something to turn to as a resource in that survival mode.
I was just thinking, as you said it, you were probably met with those lines that people hear, such as, for example, God needed another angel, or she's in a better place. And I'm also thinking that the turning towards or falling into God had a different experience or Was it taking a different way for you, your husband, and your son Mark? It wasn't the same. Like, I can't imagine that to just be easy. There's trials probably as well, and question as to how do I do that and in what way.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely not easy at all. Having faith doesn't make grief easy, and faith itself isn't easy. It doesn't come naturally, and it's effort and it's work. So it was for me, faith has been the willingness to say, I don't understand this. I don't like it, but I will choose to trust. And it's even hard to put into definition what that trust is, because it's an act of faith. Act of faith is often not physical or not, you can't pinpoint it. But giving myself the permission for both of those, which feels like a dichotomy for a lot of people. And I understand why faith is difficult in grief, because it feels like, well, how can I say I trust God, or how can I believe God loves me when I have this horrible thing happen to me and it's my day to day. It wasn't one thing that now I'm getting over.
Yeah, well, there's an assumption in there that when you believe or when you pray hard enough, things are going to be easy, right?
And that's a very human assumption that actually in scripture, it tells us you will have trials in this life. So a lot of my faith has been recognizing God never promised that our life would be easy or would be perfect. And I see story after story in the Bible of people who had very difficult circumstances and very difficult, tragic things happen. And it's in that experience that we choose to have faith. And just because something horrible happens in our life doesn't mean God doesn't exist, or God has failed us, or God has betrayed our faith. It's actually God asks us to be faithful and believe, trust his love and believe in hope despite those circumstances of our broken world.
Well, this has been probably the most interesting conversation I had about how faith has been, how faith and grief has gone together and how you managed with those two concepts. I mean, as you know, and I don't know if I've shared this before, I wouldn't consider myself as religious. I do, however, have a high level of spirituality and therefore some kind of belief that is just not religious based. But for me, the thing that I have come to understand with my losses is that what I know life is to be is birth and death. Mm-hmm. And the distance between those two coming in and going out, as I see it, is not promised, is not given. And also the way the coming in and the going out is not given. So for my case, I had the honor to birth my children and to be present at my daughter's death. For me, that was a huge honor. And for my mother, I wasn't able to be present in her support. And then she chose to die by suicide. So for me, still, that is in itself the nature of life. It's life and death. It's not just life. Yes. So I've found a lot of comfort in the understanding of there is a space we call life, and on either side is a door. One is called life and one is called death, and we celebrate life, we celebrate birth. And I wonder what would happen if we could celebrate death as a end point, and not the way that person died, but the fact of this life had a purpose and it mattered. No matter the length. And so, yeah, that's a philosophical question we could probably speak about a little bit more. But in terms of the time for this podcast, I really enjoyed our conversation. I mean, you shared so many nuggets of wisdoms there that I'm going to look forward to re-listening to it again. But for now, would it be okay to go into rapid fire questions?
Absolutely.
So these are just sentence starters, as you might have heard in other podcasts, and for you to give an answer as what comes up in a moment. So grieving and trauma means?
Allowing yourself to change as an individual while still staying true to yourself.
And healing means?
That's a really tough one for me. And part of it is because I don't, and I'm not finishing your sentence, but healing is a willingness to be open to the changes of grief.
What I have learned about myself in the light of loss and trauma?
I'm a fighter.
And one thing I wish people knew about loss and trauma?
It happens to all of us.
And one specific thing that has changed since my loss and trauma that I wouldn't want to miss?
Probably that it has given me a deeper appreciation for who my husband is as a man and as a husband and as a father.
Thank you so much for sharing and for your willingness to be authentic in what came up today, for allowing emotionality and for sharing Karina's legacy with us.
Thank you. It's been my honor.
Thanks for listening to How to Deal with Grief and Trauma. If you'd like to be updated on future episodes, please subscribe to my newsletter on nataliehimmelrich.com. If you need grief support, please contact me for a 30-minute free discovery session. How to Deal with Grief and Trauma is produced and edited by me, Natalie Himmelrich. To support this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to or follow the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. And remember to keep reading. I promise it will get easier.